is El Gray Show, voicing truth and reason. The 1918 Catholic Encyclopedia, it says this about what it calls the Kadosh, or the 30th degree of the Scottish Rite. It says that there is a trampling on the papal tiara and the royal crown that is destined to wreak just vengeance on these high criminals for the murder of de Molay. A source for this information is Albert Pike, who was a general in the Confederate Army during the Civil War. He also served as the sovereign grand commander of the southern jurisdiction of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite. And he really, from 1859 until 1891, he was a sovereign grand commander, and he's principally responsible for rewriting or creating their rituals and degree work for the degrees of the Scottish Rite from 1st to 33rd. So this claim of trampling on the papal tiara in the Kadosh degree, and let me put a clip up here of, so you can see the entry from the Catholic Encyclopedia. This is here. And so this really had become the source for that information, that for about the next 100 or so years will really be like the source information for many Catholics in their apologias in defense of the Catholic position against Freemasonry. Even recently, there is an essay that was written in this publication here called The Message. Okay. So you can see it here. And it was written in the Southwestern Indiana's Catholic Community newspaper. An essay here about Freemasons and the Catholic Church is written by Father Alex Zinhofer. And as you see in the essay, he repeats this what is now a myth and is not true about what happens in the 30th degree. And Father Alex says that when one reaches the 30th degree in the Masonic hierarchy called the Kadosh, the person crushes with his foot the papal tiara and the royal crown, and swears to free mankind from the bondage of despotism and the harrowdom of spiritual tyranny. So, and then recently, Jesse Romero had mentioned the same thing, this same story, in an interview in one of his recent radio shows. Here it is.
Replicated in every seminary in the world, it is exemplar, close quote. Yeah. When you get to the highest levels of Freemasonry, you have to step on a papal tiara and smash it under your feet. It is revealed when you get to the 32nd and 33rd levels of Freemasonry that the great architect that you've been praying to, they tell you, by the way, he's Lucifer. So it isn't revealed. It isn't revealed until you get to the 32nd and 33rd degree that you've been praying in this prayer to the great architect. You've been praying to Lucifer the whole time.
And the Illuminati, right?
Yeah.
So some weeks ago, I wrote both Father Alex Zinhofer and Jesse Romero about this myth. Because, as you know, for the past 13 years, I have been working arduously, you know, very intensely and very much invested in helping Catholics draw, as communicated Catholics, out of Freemasonry. Not by using myths, but just by using facts about what the church actually teaches. Right? So for God, you know, God willing, hope for the next 3 years, I'm able to continue to do this work and trying to help out in this regard. So in this show, I want to get into the full story about why this papal tiara thing has, you know, became so popular in Catholicism as some sort of myth to spread and to I guess, create some sort of gin up some sort of boogeyman idea about what's going on here, rather than just sticking with what the church teaches. Also, we're going to get into what the 30th degree actually teaches. Does it still teach that? Is this a valid claim for Catholics to bring up about why Catholics cannot be Freemasons? And lastly, we're going to talk a little bit about why was Theodore Cardinal McCarrick inside of a Scottish Rite temple back in the early 2000s. So this is the David L. Gray Show. Please like, share, sub, all that good stuff. If you're listening on iTunes, make sure you leave me a good review. If you'd like to become a sponsor of this show, you can definitely do that. I appreciate if you would. You could join using Patreon. That'll give you a lifetime membership as a hound of heaven to all of our content at St. Dominic's Media. And also, you can join via the YouTube membership, which gives you access to all of our videos that I've made since the early 2000s. But for now, let's get into the show.
Hovering over the skies of a post-Christian society, we have spotted a man with a donut in one hand and rosary beads in another.
Child, I'm about to whoop Satan's behind.
He is boldly proclaiming truth and reason like no rigid Catholic ever has before. The David L. Gray Show begins now.
This is the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason. We are live streaming on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. This show is backed up on Rumble and Odyssey. And we have a lot of material to cover here, so I'll take some of your questions afterwards, after I get through this material. Good morning to everybody that's in the live stream. Got a shout out to my good friend, KPJack06. You know, when I became a sublime prince of the royal secret, or what is commonly called the 32nd degree. There I am over there in the first row over there by the flag, just a young man, just like a young whippersnapper. I think he had accomplished something, man. It had to be like 1995, so I was what, 23 probably, or maybe even earlier. No, it's probably 1995. So, but when I came a 32nd degree to ancient sept of the Scottish Rite, I never, you know, sometimes I would go look at the Christian critiques of Freemasonry, you know, when the internet first started back in the early 90s. This is, you know, what we called back then, you know, as a Freemason, was anti-Masonic material. You know, I would look at some of their critiques, and it was really strange for me, because the things that they said that I had experienced, I had never experienced, right? And this is kind of what we're getting into today. So when people would tell me, oh, you know, you in the 30th degree, if they got the degree number right, you know, you crushed the papal tiara, you stabbed the papal crown, it was weird, because it's like, wait, I didn't experience that. And they would always say these things that was not my experience, and they would lose me. So I never heard the name Lucifer during any degrees. I never recall stepping on a papal crown or anything like that. And I think this is really just the crux of the problem that Catholics have to avoid. We have to avoid at all costs trying to lead so-called Catholic Freemasons out of Freemasonry by telling them what they experienced. Why do we have to get away from that? Because, as I said, with my experience, that it just wasn't true. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that Freemasonry is very local, is very jurisdictional, is that from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, Freemasons experience different things in their rituals. There's not just a whole lot of uniformity, and that even extends into the Scottish Rites. All Freemasons are not experiencing the same rituals. I talked a little bit about this in the show I did with John Salza. So again, Freemasonry is very jurisdictional, and there's a lot of variations between jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So what happens when we don't stick to the script, and I'll get into the script here in a moment, but when we deviate or when we try to tell Freemasons their experience, as we saw in that article with Father Alex, as we heard in the radio show with Jesse Romero, is that by telling Freemasons their experience, so what happens, okay, Freemason is, say they're reading that article by Father, or they're listening to Jesse Romero, so they may be going along for a moment, like, hey, this sounds interesting. Hey, I'm a Catholic. I may have heard that there is some sort of objection from Catholicism about Freemasonry. I am a Freemason, and they're saying, hey, maybe I should listen to this, and this sounds interesting. So they're going along. Everything sounds fine, or what they're reading sounds, okay, this is what the church teaches. I didn't know that. And then they hear something that's not compatible or doesn't relate to, or it's not their experience. And instantly we lose them, because now they're thinking, oh, wow, is this person not doing their research? Are they dumb? Are they lying? Are they trying to mislead people? Because that's not true. That's not my experience. And so instantly we lose them, because we lose credibility. We lose trust. And trust is essential when we're trying to evangelize and lead people to the truth. So because of that, they immediately, even if they were on board, they immediately dismiss everything that we had said heretofore, as soon as we get to the myth or as soon as we get to the lie, because like I said, they're wondering, man, what else are they lying about? So it's very problematic. We lose their trust when we get off script. So what is the script? No, the script's been the same since 1738, since Pope Clement the 12th published his papal bull in Enmity, which is high warning in Latin, is against Freemasonry in 1738. And the script has been the same ever since, from Clement the 12th to Leo to the canon law. It's all been the same. Here is what succinctly what the church teaches, that Freemasonry is incompatible with Catholicism and plots against it because Freemasonry has its own moral law. Right, so there's a law of Christ and his church. There's the divine law, I would say. And then there's Masonic law. The two are incompatible. The second thing is that Freemasonry bounds its adherence to a host of oaths and grievous punishments, which are incompatible with Catholicism, because Freemasonry is binding its members to a moral law, to a set of standards, which, again, are antithetical to Catholicism. For example, a Freemason is obligated to obey the summonses of his worship master, that he has to attend the lodge of his worship master summons him. So what if that summons happens to be on the same day and time as a holy day of obligation that the Freemason has to attend? So the Freemason has to make a choice. Either I'm going to violate the Masonic law, which there's penalties of that, or I'm going to obey the divine law in the 10 mass. So the church thinks it's demonic to put a Catholic in that position. So the oaths are problematic. Also, the church teaches that Freemasonry teaches indifferentism towards Catholicism. Is basically saying that Freemasonry is saying that Catholicism is not exceptional. That is just one of many different religions. In fact, all religions are equal, because Freemasonry is the universal religion by which all men can agree. And Freemasonry also, what Leo the 10th and Clement the 12th said, is that Freemasonry practices naturalism, which means that Freemasonry teaches that a person can improve themselves just by their own human effort, and that they don't have to pray or ask for God's grace to become what Freemasonry call a better man. So it's naturalism. And so I talk about that in other videos. So even more succinctly, I would say that the church teaches that Freemasonry is incompatible with Catholicism, or Catholicism is incompatible with Freemasonry, is because Freemasonry is teaching an alternative truth, which is irreconcilable with what has been revealed to us through Christ in his church. So this is the script, and this has been a script since 1738 without confusion. Her message has been consistent for over 200 years. All right. So over 300 years, approaching 300 years in 2038. So again, it's problematic. It becomes very problematic. We lose a lot of trust. We lose a lot of goodwill with so-called Catholics who are Freemasons when we repeat the myths. Okay. Now, in the instant case, it is a myth that the initiates to the Night of Kadosh, or the Night, it's also called the Night of the White and Black Eagle, or the 30th degree of the Scottish Rite, stabs the papal tiara. And it's been a universal myth for about 2 decades. And I'll explain that, what I mean by universal myth. So there's a lot of supreme councils of the Scottish Rite. These are the governing bodies of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. There's a lot of them. I mean, we could say there's probably 5 predominant ones, but there's many. Okay. So, and it's hard to know exactly which 30th degree all of them are practicing, but let's just focus on the ones that are just mainstream. Okay. So the 5 predominant ones are the mother of them all in their modern form. That's the ancient accepted Scottish Rite of the Southern jurisdiction. Let me see if I have a map here to put up for you. Okay. All right, so here's a map of the southern jurisdiction of the ancient accepted Scottish Rite. It's the oldest states that you see in purple there. So I call this the mother of the supreme councils of the modern day Scottish Rite, because they largely get the credit for creating a whole system of 30 degrees, even though variations of these degrees have been worked since the 1700s and 1800s in France and in other places. Okay. But in 1801, there's a group that's commonly called the 11 Gentlemen, and they're in Charleston, South Carolina. They gave birth to the Scottish Rite as we know today, and then it quickly spread around the world, this whole degree system and structure, including in 1813, it gave birth to what is called the Northern Jurisdiction of the United States, which consists of those states that you see in yellow. Okay. So the states in yellow, I believe they're headquartered in Maryland. And the Southern Jurisdiction, they're headquartered in Washington, D.C. So, but as you see, the Northern Jurisdiction probably has more members than the Southern Jurisdiction, just because these are the New England states, these are the Great Lakes states. They definitely have, aside from Texas and California, we're talking about largely the bulk of the population of the United States. So they may have more members. So in another Northern Jurisdiction, the fact that they have more members also at some point in time, there were efforts to unite the Northern Jurisdiction and the Southern Jurisdiction. And one of the points of contention was, well, one, that Albert Pike, who was a Sovereign Grand Commander at that time, he really didn't like how the Northern Jurisdiction was just bringing a lot of people, initiating a lot of people into their degrees. He thought there were just far too many 33rds, too many 32nds, just too many. So Albert Pike wanted to be just a lot more exclusive. So that was a point of contention as well. Another point of contention was that the Northern Jurisdiction didn't like Albert Pike's degrees. They liked their degrees. And there's some historic issues there. You know, Albert Pike, He's a Confederate. You know, these are Yankees. There's some issues here, just culturally, just socially. And so, but from the Southern jurisdiction's perspective, they were quoted as saying that they believe that Albert Pike's degrees are perfect, as perfect as you can humanly get, they said. So, so aside from the northern jurisdiction and the southern jurisdiction of the United States, you also have jurisdictions in France and Canada, England and Wales. You have a really weird one, a really weird right that operates also in Europe that you don't. It's le droit, chemin. They're small, but they're loud. So you hear a lot about them. So those are probably the five main jurisdictions of the Scottish Rite. But it's like you have a lot, even here in the United States, because a lot of people just go pick up a book of the Scottish Rite and just, you know, start working the degrees. So you have a lot, but those are the five predominant and recognized. So the reason why this is important to lay out the fact that there's so many different jurisdictions who are operating these same, you know, this family of degrees, is that when we get to the 30th degree, even up to that point, none of these jurisdictions have the same name for degrees from 4 up to 30. They're different names, even up to 32nd. They're named differently. They're grouped differently because there's houses. You know, a house is degree 4 through 15. That's a house, and that house can actually meet, initiate members, conduct business. Then the next house, let's say 15 through 18, that's a house. The house has a leadership, it has a structure, and they meet. So the groupings of the houses are not the same. The names are not the same. And even the degrees themselves are not the same. So there's now largely you will see that most jurisdictions outside the United States, they borrow from Pike rather than the Northern jurisdiction. So Pike system was exported more so than a Northern jurisdiction. Okay. So that's an important thing to remember as well. When we talk about it, it's a myth that the papal tiara thing is universally practiced. Okay. Now, so when we get to the 30th degree, we can find there is a 30th degree around the world. Everyone has a 30th degree in a Scottish Rite. But in the Northern jurisdiction, it is not called the Knights of Cadoche. It's called something else. So they don't even have this degree. So now I go back to the point that I made when I was in a Northern jurisdiction. I never experienced this thing called the Knights of Cadoche or the Knights of the Black and White Eagle. It was never my experience, nor the experience if you talk to any 32nd or any 30th degree Scottish Rite Freemason. They'll all tell you, no, I didn't experience that. And this is before, we'll get to the in the Southern jurisdiction how these degrees were revised anyway, but now it's in the early 2000s, but it had never been the case that a Freemason in a Northern jurisdiction experienced any sort of Knights of Cadoche degree. So that's the first reason why, as Catholics, we have to get away from just repeating this myth that, oh, you stepped on the papal tiara or stabbed the papal tiara, your degree you received is anti-Catholic, because it's not universally true. And by saying that, we lose a customer. It's kind of like, you know, you go into a place, you want to buy something, and a salesperson, you know, you've done a lot of research, and a lot of customers today does a lot of research before they go buy anything, from a car to a coffee maker. But you encounter a salesperson who says something incongruent or contradictory to what you read. So now the salesperson, he either grows in esteem in your eyes because he knows something that you do not, or he loses credibility because he is saying a lie, right? So either way, there's some suspicion out here. As Catholics, we shouldn't have that suspicion, and we won't if we just stick to the script of what the church teaches. Now, to the 30th degree of the Scottish Rite. So at one time, the 30th degree is found in the southern jurisdiction. Let me pull the ritual up here. So, yeah, at one point in time, this was the case. Yeah, how about that? Yeah, so this was the case. You may not be able to see the whole ritual there, but I'll point out some things to you. So Albert Pike's Scottish 30th degree of the Knight of Cadoche did have a ritual that was very anti-Catholic. Not only was it anti-Catholic, but it's also anti-monarchical or anti-French monarchy. Okay, so it was both anti-monarchy or both anti-French monarchy and anti-Catholic at the same time, and I'll tell you why. So this degree, what it does is it calls the regal crown of the French King Philip IV, it calls it the emblem of hypocrisy and tyranny. And it also says that is the crown of all those who, under the name of king and monarch, who have usurped the power exclusively belonging to the people, and for that reason we trample it underfoot. And they tell the initiate at this moment, we invite you to do the same. So the initiate, they're sitting down at this time, typically in a northeast corner of the temple. What's happened at this point, they went around and they've been obligated in a degree. Now they're sitting down and they're receiving instruction. And so their instructor is telling them the story about the things that are placed before them, right? Or maybe they're still walking around this time. It just depends how they're going to do this degree. So they could be walking around and the instructor happens to bring them upon some crowns. And he points to this crown and says, this is the regal crown. It's an emblem of hypocrisy and tyranny. Is the crown of French King Philip IV. And not only is it his crown, but it also belongs to every monarch who has usurped the power exclusively belonging to the people. And for that reason, we trample it. And then the instructor tells the candidate, you're also invited to trample it. And so the candidate does. The candidate would take his foot and step on the crown, either physically or as if, you know, he would just step on the ground. You know, it just depends how many crowns that the council wants to buy. Also, the candidate may not participate in this degree at all. He may just be initiated in it, and he may just receive some sort of verbal instruction about what it means. Also, the candidate may not participate in the degree, but he may just see it reenacted. He may just be sitting there, and then the instructor takes around a dummy candidate who reenacts the whole thing for him. So there's different variations. So then the instructor says that he points to the next crown and says, this is the papal tiara of Clement IV. This tiara represents the tiara of the cruel and cowardly pontiff who sacrificed his ambitions of the illustrious order of those called Knights Templar, of whom we are the true assessors. It then calls this the crown of the imposter. Okay. Let me see if I can bring up some more of that ritual, just so you can get like a fuller context of what is being said here. And maybe if you're watching on your, you know, your TV screen, you may be able to see it. Maybe you may be able to see it. All right. So he invites them to trample it underfoot. And then the thrice pursuivant Grand Master then throws the crown on the floor and tramples upon it. And the candidate and all the knights trample upon it. When all the knights brandish their poniards, their swords, and exclaim, "Down with the tyrants! May thus roll in dust in the crown of every king and potentate." And then he gets some more instruction. The instructor gives some more instruction about what the tiara represents. And, you know, the gold. And it says that the gold crown and precious stones ill benefits the humble head of one who pretends to be successor, the vicar of Jesus Christ. It is therefore the crown of an impostor, and is the name of him who said, "Neither be ye called masters, that we trample it under your foot." So, then it goes on. On the thrice pursuivant master says, "A candidate, are you disposed to do the same?" The candidate says, "I am." He then throws the tiara on the floor and tramples upon it. The candidate and all the knights trample upon it. When all the knights brandish, oh, this is a repeat. It's reenacting it. So as you see, this is, it's quite anti-Catholic, right? If you just read it out of context of what they're trying to communicate here. All right. So, and not only is it anti-Catholic, but like I said, it's just anti-French, it's anti-monarch. But what's going on here is that I think it's just a bad reaction to a very real historical event. It's almost like historical fiction, or it's like reactionary to their version of history concerning what happened with King Philip the IV and Pope Clement the. Did I get the numbers wrong? Man, these numbers are. So King Philip, King Philip the IV and Pope Clement the V, yeah. So, in their relationship between what happened with them and a Knights Templar, so. It's true that King Philip, I think he worked very intensely and arduously, and a lot of machinations in place that he worked to get rid of the Knights Templar. That's historically true. I think we could all agree there. Now, why that's the case, why the Knights Templar got on his bad side, you know, history suspects many things. One thing is that there's a belief that the Knights Templar owed Philip a lot of money for their role in, you know, the Crusades and some of the role that they played in some of his, him hiring them as mercenaries in a way to do some of his bidding. So because he was in debt to them, he wanted to bring them up on false charges and imprison them and get rid of them. But, you know, that's really just a podcast for another day, that whole Knights Templar issue. But it did take Philip, man, like three popes to finally find a pope willing enough to work with him. Now, keep in mind that when Clement the V comes into power, that he's not even a cardinal. So the conclave that elected him had a lot of tension. They really couldn't find their guy. So Clement, he is really thought of as like a compromise pope. Some historians will call him a compromised pope because of his relationship with Philip. And there's some historians would say that Philip played a huge role in putting Clement the IV in there as his guy to do his bidding. Now, we can really look at the history of Clement the IV and say a lot of things. I mean, we may not like the whole Knights Templar thing. There's some issues there, you know, him going against the council, which said that the Knights Templar should not be excommunicated or killed, or there's nothing wrong with anything that they've done. But he went against the ruling of the council and he put them up for death, including their leader, De Molay, which is, again, De Molay and the Knights Templar, they're, you know, the Freemasons, they consider them, you know, their successors in a way. Again, it's fiction, but you always see this in the Knights, degrees of chivalry that you see in a Scottish writing, you see in a Knights Templar, New York, right? All the degrees of chivalry, they always want to use the Knights Templar as their motto. And even when the Masonic youth group, the De Molay, they're named after De Molay, who's the last Grand Master of the Knights Templar. So there's always this undercurrent in Freemasonry that's anti-Catholic in this sense, because they're working with a framework of history that's saying, because we somehow, the Knights Templar were somehow our progenitors, or we were somehow descended from them, that we're also victims to the Catholic Church, right? So you have that. But Clement wasn't all bad. I mean, it wasn't for his, we just got out of the feast, the Solemnity of the Body of Christ. And we have to remember, if it wasn't for Clement the Fourth and his, what's called his Clementine laws, we may not have, or may have happened later, the feast of the Body of Christ. Because remember, Urban the Fourth, he was the first one to promulgate a bull celebrating the feast, the Solemnity. But it wasn't until 12 popes later, until Clement comes along, where it's actually picked back up. So, but as I say, like many degrees that you find, if not all degrees that you find in Freemasonry, I'd probably say all, that they're all telling some sort of story. Every degree has some sort of story attached to it. This is the drama of Freemasonry. And what they're all doing is telling some sort of historic event. Whether it's a fictional historic event, some sort of historical fiction, as we see in the first three degrees with the building of King Solomon's Temple, into the York Rite, into many other degrees, or the degrees of chivalry, which are telling stories about the Order of the Red Cross and the Knights Templar and the Order of Malta. The purpose of these degrees is to communicate a moral lesson. Again, it could be real, it could be fiction, it could be revisionary, but the degrees, the story always plays an important role in the Masonic degrees. So, and I would say that the revisionist history that, or the response to the history, this victim ideology that Freemasons carry, or Scottish Rite Freemasons carry into, or they used to carry, or in some places still do carry into the 30th degree, is really, I think, it's just silly. It's a revisionist victim history that's reactionary in a way that is blasphemous, and it attacks Christ and his church. Nevertheless, the point here is that this degree, again, was never worked, at least in one predominant rite of the ancient and septic Scottish rite. It would just never work. So it was never part of that system. So the vast majority of Freemasons who have become 30th degree Scottish Rite Freemasons throughout time has never experienced this anti-Masonic, anti-French, anti-monarchy degree. This degree could still be worked in some parts of the world. The Ledroit Human system is probably definitely one. I don't know about England, and Canada and France and Wales. I don't know for sure. Okay. But when it comes to the Southern jurisdiction of the United States, according to Arturo de Hoyes, who is both a 33rd degree Freemason, and he's also a Knight Cross, a Knight, what is that thing called again? Knight of the York Cross of Honor. So what it means is that Arturo, he's received both the highest titles or honors or coronations, I would say, of both the Scottish and the York Rite, which is rare. He's also the Grand Archivist and a Grand Historian of the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite of the Stirling Jurisdiction. So to put this in context, this letter I'm about to show you from Otoro, is that here's a difference. When Catholics and Protestants who really don't have much understanding of Freemasonry, when they want to put out their put out their apologias in defense of Catholicism against Freemasonry, or in the case of Protestant scripture against Freemasonry, they have the tendency to quote who? They almost always quote Pike. That letter, that essay I showed you from Father Alex, he quotes Pike in there as well. And again, that's another one of those things when a Freemason is reading this stuff, we instantly lose him when we quote Pike. Pike isn't really taken seriously in regards to the esoteric things that he wrote on morals and dogma. He's not really taken seriously. Freemasons know this. And so when they're reading this stuff, like, oh, here go those Christians again, quoting Pike, you know, we instantly lose them. So, but this is who the Catholic or the Protestant in their apologias and defense and against Freemasonry, who they quote. They always want to go to Pike. You see, I never do that because my audience, who I'm trying to evangelize, is so-called Catholics who are Freemasons. So I know how to speak to them. So it's not something you'll ever see me do. I never quote Pike. Now, who do Freemasons quote if they don't quote Pike? Well, Freemasons quote people like Otoro. There's about five Freemasons in the world that are just like universally known in every language in the world. Okay. Brent Morris might be one. Arturo is another. Okay. And these are people who I quoted when I was a Freemason. I didn't quote Pike. I quoted these guys. So Arturo is the guy who I wrote when I wanted to get an answer to this question. Okay. And so here is the letter. Let me put it on screen here. So I sent him a letter asking him, and I think I knew him when I was a Freemason. I think we met at some point in time. I can't recall where we met, but I had wrote him asking him about whether it's true or not, whether the papal tiara crushing is still part of the Southern jurisdiction ritual. And this is a letter that he writes me back. He says, in this letter, all references to the papal tiara were removed from the ritual about 20 years ago. So all references to the papal tiara were removed from the ritual about 20 years ago. And he's talking about, again, the Southern jurisdiction, because it was already never in a Northern jurisdiction. He's not saying in this letter that everyone who borrowed our ritual, they also took it out. He's not saying England and Wales and France or LaDroite or any of these people took it out, or any of these spurious, bogus, clandestine type of groups took it out either. He's just focusing on the Scottish Rite, Southern jurisdiction. He's saying we took it out about 20 years ago. He says the ritual revisions, which covered in the entire Scottish Rite from 4 to 32, eliminated redundancies, clarified things, and hopefully remove all passages which can be misinterpreted as offensive. Then he adds something I didn't ask, which I thought was interesting that he added it, that it's interesting for us to consider here. He says that in 2001, I had the opportunity to meet by invitation with high level officials of the Roman Catholic Church at the Vatican. So he's invited to the Vatican to meet with some whoever. Interesting. 2001. So this is when, so yeah, John Paul II is still Pope, yet he's largely checked out, I think, by this point, right? I think he's largely checked out. Other people are running the Curia. So Arturo, he is invited here. And by this time in 2001, like I said, I knew Arturo when I was a Freemason. From 1994 until 2006, you know. And I was well known in Masonic research circles for my work. And so in 2001, he was already someone who I was quoting. And so he was already someone who was very well known. And if the Vatican was going to invite someone to speak with, it would have been him and maybe a couple others. I think, again, like somebody like Bryn Morris. Okay. So he says that it was a very cordial meeting, which led to further discussions with, he says, at that time is Archbishop McCarrick here in D.C. I'm thinking McCarrick was probably a cardinal already by then, though. So he says about this, about McCarrick. He said McCarrick was very friendly, visited the House of the Temple. So this is the headquarters of the Scottish Rite in D.C., where they're headquartered. McCarrick visited there. And Arturo says that we had hopes of further discussion when he resigned. Even then, Dr. Arturo says, we were happy to inform him that there were no remarks at all concerning Catholicism. So we take this for what it's worth, all right? I mean, we can definitely dig into, you know, why would McCarrick perhaps play some sort of role in inviting Scottish Rite Freemasons, or maybe just who knows what type of Freemasons were there, but invite them first to the Vatican and then go a step further to visit them at their headquarters. We can speculate why that happened, but that it happened, we're not definitely surprised by. It's definitely not inconsistent with who or who McCarrick was or perhaps still is. But the point I would like to redress here before I get to your questions and some of your comments to wrap this up is that we're losing opportunities to evangelize Freemasons out of Freemasonry, particularly Catholic, so-called Catholic Freemasons out of Freemasonry, by not sticking to the script, by constantly repeating these myths and these half-truths by which Freemasons are easily able to dismiss us as being untruthful, as being liars, as being poor researchers, as being just not credible, not really be taken seriously because we're not doing the research. We're not sticking with the facts. We're not sticking with the scripts. So for more information about this topic on Freemasonry, again, I have a huge catalog I've been working on. I have classes. I have books. So many essays. So many videos on this topic. You just have to visit David L. Gray. Click on the link that says Catalog of Freemasonry, and you'll see all the work I've been putting in since 2010. Like I said, I'm only going to be doing this work for about 3 more years. So, and now we have another entry into the catalog here about trampling the myth of the papal tiara and the Knights of Cadoc degree. Let's just stop saying that whole thing about the papal tiara because it's easy not to take it seriously because of it. All right, let me get to your comments and any questions that you have. And then we'll get out of here. Some comment. Oh, that's funny. KP Jack, he said he became a 32nd in 1995, too. That's funny. We're doing the same thing at the same time. Colin's here. Amanda's here. Michael's here. Michael has a question. Wouldn't it be proper to refer to him as ex-Cardinal Theodore McCarrick now? Yeah. Yeah, ex-Archbishop, ex-everything. Still a Catholic, hopefully full of perfect contrition. Hopefully. Emma Thorey's here. Happy Father's Day. So you guys don't have any questions? Awesome. Looks like, so I must have done like a really thorough job explaining this whole topic. But if you're watching the show later, feel free to drop a question in the comment section on the YouTube or anywhere else that you find a video, and I'd be happy to get to it later. So this is the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason. Appreciate all you coming into the live stream and those who are watching the recorded. Have a blessed day, and I'll see you on the next time. Peace. Oh, wait. One more comment. Kevin says, I was in Southern jurisdiction. I remember vaguely stepping on the dome of a St. Peter's Basilica. Okay. That's interesting. So there you go. Yep. This would have been before, so 95, definitely be long before the revision. So yeah, there you go. Confirmation. Appreciate it, KP. Peace.